Today is May 21st, 1976, and we were talking with Mr. Paul Giovannini. Paul is Safety Service Director of the City of Alliance. And we are going to talk to him today about the City of Alliance as he remembers it from his boyhood days and on. Paul, how long have you lived in Alliance?
All my life. 65 years.
65 years. So we'll have some 65 years of memories. You came from a section of town with a particular name attached to it, not just the City of Alliance, but a section of town?
Well, the section of town I came from was down in Irishtown.
Irishtown.
Irishtown. There were two factions. Irishtown, of course, there was the old Gold Hill, and then there was East End. There was three different areas in town that was there were a lot of groups and ethnic groups, Irish, Welsh. The Welsh Goat Hill came, the name Goat Hill came from Welsh people, where they came from. They were their thing that they have on in Wales, where they came from. They raised goats. There was a lot of things. Anybody came that who was a Welshman was known as a goat. Back in those days, and probably even today too, from Wales, goat is what they raise a lot of goat over there. So whenever there was a colony any place of Welshmen, they were goats or Goat Hill. And down here, because of the Welshmen in that area, they were goats in Goat Hill.
And these Welshmen primarily worked where, do you know?
They worked at primarily at the Morgan Engineering Company and, of course, American Steel Foundries and Alliance Machine, right in that area, right down through there.
So most of the people who lived in this Goat Hill area were Welsh.
Welsh.
Then. And where was Goat Hill? Where was
Goat
it located?
Goat Hill was right where the Morgan Avenue School is now. Was their field, was the athletic field at the time. But starting, say, from Forest Avenue up to Liberty, and then from Summit over to All Street, that was known as the Gold Hill area.
I see. And that, of course, is located near Morgan Engineering's
right.
plant, too.
Yes.
So they were very close. Is this area still known as Gold Hill today?
It still is.
The name
there's still a few down there from the old timers and some of the younger group, but most of them are all moved away now. Ethnic groups has moved in, and it's just they just moved away. The younger groups split up, even the ones from the East End, from Irishtown, and of course down the area where I come from, there was a group of Italians, sort of a little Italian village down there, and that's where I came from, which is down around Mahoning Avenue and Patterson and Liberty and Webb Street and Noble Street and Pike Street. This was sort of an Italian colony in the City of Alliance.
But yet it was called Irishtown.
Well, Irishtown was right next to us, on right up off of Broadway, down at the end of Broadway.
Now, which end of Broadway would this be?
That would be Broadway and Mahoning. It would be the
east
end of Broadway. This was known as Irishtown.
And all of this then seems to be located in the East End. I mean, you're mentioning Goat Hill, and that's on the eastern part of town, and Irishtown, that's the eastern part of town.
Well, you must remember, Miss Miller, that the town in those days was down here in the East End. Prior to 1920, the town didn't move south. Up Liberty, there was hardly anything. I can remember Mr. Polinari from Polinari's Gardens up there. He lived next to us down Mahoning Avenue. He's an Italian, lived next to us. And he went up to put a little business up there on Liberty Avenue. And my dad thought he was crazy because he grew up in an area where there was no people. People were down here.
Right.
At one time, I the way I understand, of course, is before my time, down on Webb Street, this was the elite part of town prior to 1885, 1880. This is where all your elite was in town. In fact, your postmaster and your well-to-do people lived down in that area, Patterson Street, Webb Street, and then, of course, the town started to grow south.
Right.
When my dad came to Alliance in about 1903 or 4, all of Alliance was this side of, old Grant Street. And then, of course, on Union Avenue, and of course, south of Union Avenue, I can remember up there when Parkway Boulevard was just a mud street. I can remember working on a farm up on State Street when State Street was a dirt street from Parkway Boulevard going east. It was dirt, and I can just barely remember when they paved Parkway Boulevard.
And by paving, you mean bricking it, don't you?
Well, of course.
Right.
Yes. But in those days, that end of town, there wasn't too much growth that way. It came in later years.
I think this makes sense that this huge growth in the settlement in Alliance at that time would have been down by your industries.
That's right.
Because this
well,
was where...
Well, let me explain it this way. Back in those days, there were no automobiles. So anybody who worked at American Steel Foundry at Morgan's lived in that area.
Right.
Because they walked to work.
Right.
Today, they work at Morgan's, they work at Alliance Machine, they live in Canton with your mode of travel today. But most of your people who worked at the old American Steel Foundries, and my dad first worked when he came to Alliance, and all these fellows from Goat Hill, they all lived next to their shop, within walking distance of their shop. So they get up at 6:30 in the morning, or leave house at 6:30 in the morning, and get to their work before 7 o'clock.
Hmm.
But today it's a completely different thing. Everybody wants to move away from a shop, away from noise, away from railroads. Alliance at one time was a railroad city, and everybody lived down next to the railroad.
Right.
Because that's where they worked.
And that's how they got to the different cities. They
right.
didn't, obviously, if they didn't have automobiles, they didn't drive to Canton. They took
that's
the train
right.
to Canton.
That's right.
Yes.
That's
it's just a different way of life.
It's a completely different way of life. And not only that, back in those days when I was a kid, where you lived is where you got your enjoyment. Or if you want to go out on a picnic. We went to Maple Beach Park. At one time, Maple Beach Park was a nice park. Mm-hmm. It had concession stands. It had boats that you could rent. It was, of course, we as kids, we swam in the river, up and down the Mahoning River, all over down there. Never knew what a bathing suit was until I got to be 18 years old. Well, anyhow,
nobody would swim in Mahoning River today anyway.
Well,
are
you
they
couldn't
permitted?
Swim in it today.
No.
It wasn't fit to swim, but back in those days, we did. And no, I just... But... You got whatever enjoyments you had, you got it close. So Goat Hill, on a Sunday, in the summer, or in the fall, was a place to go for entertainment.
Hmm.
And that's where the whole town went.
Even though you lived in Irishtown or somewhere else, Goat Hill was the place to go.
All the kids from that end of town all either went to the East End game down at East End, or you went to Goat Hill. And When I got to be 10, 11 years old, East End had just about finished, and it was all merged into Goat Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one of the finest baseball teams, semi-pro teams around. In fact, prior, in 1918, the old Goat Hill football team. Now, on that team, on our football team here, we had Bud Howell. And we had quite a few. There was, of course, the ones who were, to us, were heroes, were Leo Gensline, Gus Gensline, Legs Moore, Russell Austin, Mush Siegel, Bud Howell, D.I. Mainwaring, which is the father of Dave Mainwaring,
oh, yes.
Bill Stockham, Abe Wise, Sam Wise. Now, Bud Howell was on the team. And, of course, Bud Howell's brother, Eddie Howell, was an official. He lived in Sebring. And their brother, Bill, was a Camp Sherman June 1918 the war. And they brought the football team up from Camp Sherman to play the Goat Hill team.
That's how good the Goat Hill team was.
That's how good the Goat Hill team was. And we used to have teams come in here. The Akron Utes used to come in every year. There was a big rivalry between Goat Hill and the Akron Utes. And we had other big teams come in. In those days, most of your towns around had semi-pro teams, see, and which were a pride of the town. The City of Alliance followed the Fairmont, the Goat Hill team down there, and then they became the Fairmont Bulls, of course. And Alliance just followed them. Every Sunday, just everybody went down there.
Hmm.
There was no television. There was no places to go except you got your entertainment in your community.
Now, if they went to this area to see these games, where were the games played?
On Goat Hill Field, right where Morgan Avenue School is now. And of course, it was a grandstand. There was a fence around the field, and of course in the summertime we really enjoyed to go up and watch a ball game. Of course, and watch these, to us who were the heroes, the home run hitter was Charlie Graw, who was an ice man, by the way. He sold ice for the Crescent Ice and Coal. Charlie Graw was the right fielder, and of course his brother Jed Graw was a pitcher, and then the Jones brothers, Joe Jones, and who played center field, Jimmy Jones, who played third base. Marty Gotchlin at second base. There was the catchers were Spike Morrissey, Clyde Arrissey, Kuklov brothers, Frank and Leo. Pitchers who we thought were to us were famous. Emmett Cleggett, Whitaker, Art Leisure. And then, of course, Jed Graw, who had tried out for the Pittsburgh Pirates, came back, And to us, when Jed Graul pitched, we just filled that stadium down there, and it was just filled with people from Alliance go to watch the ball games.
Now, this team you mentioned, you went to watch, right?
Yes.
So this period, these were the people who really were part of Goat Hill in its heyday, so
that's
to speak,
right.
The golden age,
yeah,
which would have been...
The golden age of Goat Hill, I would say, between 1910 and 1925.
Mm-hmm.
In 1925, they switched over from being the Goat Hill then the Fairmont Bulls. Charlie Barnes from the Fairmont Provision Company took the team over, and he changed the name to Fairmont Bulls. And then in their last year was 1930. I played with them. Now we're talking about an era that I played, and I know these fellas.
Right.
Now on those teams was fellas that are still around. Some of them are passed away, and we had good crowds follow us there up until that last year when I played. And of course, this is hitting the Depression. Ray Schaefer, Harold DeBee, Oliver Shively, Bill Dixon, Louis Aprandi, Lem Stifler, a fellow by the name of Middleton from out at Marlboro. I don't remember what his first name was. And then we had a fellow by the name of Shaw from Minerva, who later became at the head of the Ohio State Highway Patrol. I think his first name was Bob, I'm not sure. He played an end, opposite end from Ray Schaefer. In the backfield was Bob Pauley, who was still around, but of course, a couple of these fellows are gone. Bill Dixon is gone, Stifler is gone. And Bob Pauley, I just seen him the other day. And of course, Gene Pugh was gone. And in 1930, Mount Union College was one of the first colleges around to put lights on their field. In 1930, they had the lighted field. And Charlie Barnes contracted with Mount Union College to play two games up there to see if he'd get a better crowd. In other words, increase his attendance, because this is Depression on 1930.
Yeah.
So the first game we played was a Canton Roger Jewelers, which was a spinoff of the old Canton Bulldogs. They became the Canton Roger Jewelers, and that's where I got a broken leg. I got a broken leg in that game. And the following week, they played Minerva Merchants. And then, of course, he dropped that because there wasn't enough people come out. But that was on Wednesday nights. We played two games. And, of course, then there was Frank Hogue, who was our coach, who I felt was one of the finest football players I ever seen. Of course, he dissipated a little bit, and this was wrong. I always thought that if Frank Hogue would have gone to college, he could have become an All-American, because he could do everything with the football.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there was John Dan, Glenn Dickin, John Zaynard played with him, Warren Siddle, and well, many others. I just can't remember all of them. But these are the fellows that I played with that I know. Now, the other ones I'm talking about is back when I was from 10 to 16 years old.
When you were watching.
When I was
games.
Watching.
Yes. Primarily football. Now, you played football, but they had some... You watched the baseball.
I watched the baseball. Baseball I played was... in the golden era of the softball, when they played the fastball pitch back in between 1935 and 1949, I'd say. That was a golden era of softball, what we used to call softball. We had teams come from all over into Alliance, and Alliance went from all over. We had teams that went up to Wisconsin to play for a championship.
Mm-hmm.
We had softball pitchers who were the best in the business. We had a fellow named Bill Kurleski. He's passed on now, one of the best. Homer Greenewald. Wonderful pitcher from Alliance. The tee was pretty tough to hit, and we've had numerous ones. There used to be a fellow, Lionel Thomas was a pitcher, was good. And of course, we met some of the best around. And of course, then after that, it was my ball playing games were over.
Well, I imagine you didn't play too much after you broke your leg, did you?
I played one more year over. I went to play up at the Ravenna. You know, when I got hurt playing with the Fairmont Bulls, Charlie Barnes got a fellow from Ravenna come down to replace me, a fellow named Joe DeLeon. He replaced me when I got hurt. 2 years later, Joe DeLeon sent down for us. He wanted to form a team up in Ravenna. So he invited us to go up there to try out for the team. So me and Glenn Dickin went up. You know who I mean by Glenn Dickin.
Mm-hmm.
We went up and we made the team, of course, and so we played in the old Brimfield, what they call the Brimfield Kennels, used to be a dog track at Brimfield, and we played inside that dog track at night. Well, we played four games there and just couldn't make no money. They was going to give us $3 a game. Then, of course, we decided to go on the road, see if we could make more money. So on a Sunday afternoon, we went up to Akron to play the Akron South Aunties, which at that time was the toughest semi-pro team in all northeastern Ohio. Well, we played on a Sunday afternoon, a real hot day. We had timekeepers who didn't even know what they're doing, so we played all afternoon in that football game. Well, we got beat 6-0. But it wasn't so much being beat 6-0 as the body beating we took. Well, anyhow, after the game, we're sitting in a dressing room to be paid, which they was paying us $2 a game. Well, I'm sitting next to Glenn Dickin, and we're putting our clothes on. They come along to pay us. Well, they handed Glenn Dickin $2. When they came to me, they ran out of folding money. They gave me 8 quarters. Well, the $2 looked pretty big, but the 8 quarters somehow just didn't seem too much. So I had to give him, he drove up to Akron, I had to give him a quarter for gasoline to driving up there. I had to buy 2 hamburgers and a cup of coffee for a quarter. I come home, I handed my wife 6 quarters for an afternoon of football. And that's the last game of football I ever played.
How many games was that then you paid?
That was I think it was the 6th game.
Oh, my goodness.
Of the year.
My goodness.
$2 a game.
$2.
But $2 in those days, I know to us, it seems something.
Well,
but then you had to love the game.
Yes, that's true. Plus, you're telling me you got 2 hamburgers and a cup of coffee for a quarter.
For a quarter.
And you had gas to get to Akron for a quarter,
yeah,
too. So it was a different amount, yeah, in those days. But you were paid.
We were paid.
These teams that each city
each
had
we played,
were paid.
We got $2. See? With the Fairmont Bulls, I was getting $7 a game.
My.
That was big money.
That's success. Well, when these, now Fairmont would have sponsored the team, in other words, they actually
Fairmont
paid
Bulls.
You.
Oh, yes, they paid us.
And they collected the receipts because you charged admission, right?
Yes, oh, yes. They
paid into
they
these
collected
things.
Everything was theirs. They paid us a salary. In fact, we were their employees.
I see.
Of the Fairmont Provision Company. When I got hurt, broke my leg, I got paid through workman's compensation because I was an employee of the Fairmont Provision Company.
Would this have been true with the old Goat Hill team in those days?
No, they probably didn't even carry insurance. Like up there at Ravenna, there was no insurance.
No.
I mean, in those days, I don't know whether, well, they probably, if you got hurt, they would probably have a charity game for you, play a game for you, and give all the receipts.
Right.
That's the way they done it in those days.
Well, when you fellas played on your teams at this time and you were paid, you had other jobs, though, didn't you?
Oh, sure. Everybody
yeah.
did.
This was a spare time.
This was
time.
Something extra money, these $2, you know.
Yeah, right. And it sounds like it was a pretty enjoyable way to earn the extra money.
Well, it was a lot of hard work for a dollar and a half.
What kind of hard work did you go through? How many times during the week did you train?
Well, we didn't. We drove up to the Ravenna Arsenal, the old Ravenna where the National Guard.
Yeah, it was an ammunition plant, wasn't
we,
it?
In that big building is where we trained. We didn't really train. All we did was run plays up there. Most of us had some football, and we were familiar with way plays run, where holes are, blocking assignments. We were familiar with all that from being playing in high school and playing years before. This we knew, see. So all we did was run through plays mostly. As far as training concerned, there wasn't too much training like they have in football today. Even with the old Goat Hill, there was no training during the week. They used to get together and run some plays. And that's about all there was to the training in those days.
When you played your game, was it a pretty rough game?
Rough games.
Rules were a little different than they are now?
Rules were just a little bit different than they are now. That's how I got the broken leg.
I suspected that. Yeah. How about the rivalry? In the days when you played on the team and had football, were you pretty much all of the same ethnic background, or were you different?
Well, no. I'm Italian. There was the Welsh. There was the Irish. There was the Genslines. They would have been Welsh, I suppose. Russell Austin was from Minerva. I mean, from Marlborough. Russell Austin was one of these mighty mites, just a little guy. But he was fast, and he was tough. And, of course, Mush Siegel was small, but he was tough. The Genslines are, again, like I say, they trained mostly in the local saloons back in those days, I suppose, and that's the way they were, but they were rugged, tough. Don't come up against them because they tear your head off.
My.
That's the type of football players they were.
You didn't have much protection in those days either, did you?
No, you don't have the protection you have today.
No.
You had a pair of football pants. You had shoulder pads that were mostly thick felt. But all, even those, even up until as late as 1942, 43, even in the high school, they're mostly all felt. Now they have these plastic now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I really think today that the helmets they have in high school today, they're a dangerous weapon, because if somebody spears you with a headgear they have today, they can't hurt themselves, but they sure can hurt you.
Hmm.
Not only in football, in the high school, but in fact they have a penalty now for spearing in high school.
Ah.
Because they spear you with a headgear, and as hard as that headgear is, you can hurt somebody. You can crack ribs, or you can hit them in the stomach, hit them in the back, and this is...
But you didn't have those kind
back,
of helmets.
No, the helmets we had then were felt, and I mean, there was just a...
Very little protection
there. Very
little
protection. Yeah. In fact, when I first went out with the Lions High School football, it was very little protection you had in those days, 1927. Didn't have too much. But things were just a little bit different.
Just a little bit, yes. How about going back to the games that you used to watch at Goat Hill? Now, those would have been more the Welsh team,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Yes, they were all those fellows around Goat Hill.
And who were their chief opponents?
Oh, I forgot to tell you about the manager.
Oh, okay.
The manager of both teams was a fellow named John Hallman. Everybody called him Toady. Toady Hallman was the manager. And he was the manager always. He played baseball with them. He played second base, or even some shortstop once in a while. And, of course... He's just a little guy. He wasn't too big of a man, but he was the important man in all of Goat Hill, because he was the manager. See? And of course, one time, Legs Moore, who was a real good center they had back in those big, tall man in the center, got hurt. So Toady, who always dressed up for the games, went in to play center. I think he lasted two plays. He's just a little guy.
He couldn't make it.
But he was the manager. And even in later years, when we met at reunions up until... John had left town here. I don't know where he's gone. He's retired and gone out. I think he's passed away now. But even at all the reunions, here comes the manager. You know. Here comes,
yes. Well, I don't know of many managers today, if the center got hurt, that they'd step in and even try.
Oh, he was just in those days, just a manager. And he handled things pretty good. He scheduled all the games, and he'd done all the work for him.
And that was in his spare time, too?
Huh?
In
oh,
his
yeah.
spare
oh,
time,
sure.
too?
Oh, sure. Everything is in spare time. And the umpires down there was... Bill Russell, back there, umpire. He would be the father of Larry Russell, who was pretty famous at Alliance High School. He was a real good athlete in Alliance High School. But Bill was the umpire, and he's still Sam. He'd go out in the middle of the field, and he'd yell, "The battery for today," he would say. He'd name off the batteries, and then they'd throw a ball out in the middle of the field, and he'd say, "Play ball," and he'd get back. I tell you, to us, you know, as kids, this to us, it was really big stuff.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. Well, then they usually had two teams, a baseball team and a football team.
Every year.
Every year.
Yeah.
And then that, in the golden age of Goat Hill, that one man managed them both.
Yeah, Toady.
Toady.
Toady. And Toady that Hallman. I can remember, Toady Hallman. Well, if there was any back prior to 1920, I wouldn't know if there was a different manager, but Toady Hallman, everybody went, here comes the manager.
How about when you were kids and wanted to watch the games, and if you didn't have the price to get in, what was the price to get in?
Gee, I can't remember, but I think adults it was 50 cents. And for kids, I think it was 15 or 20 cents, but we just waited outside till a fall ball came over the fence, and we grabbed it and went over, handed it to the ticket agent, and he let us in.
That was free admission.
Except if that fall ball came over the fence in the ninth inning, then we'd grab it and run home.
How about football games? There aren't many foul balls in football
no,
games.
No foul balls in football games, but we had to go up around the close to the lines machine and come in through the swamp. We had to sneak in somehow. Very seldom we paid our way in, but most of the time they overlooked it. They had fellows around the field. They know they let the kids in. Comes around the half, they say, "All right, come on in, boys." They'd let us in. There was no great thing about it. And, of course, my dad came out a couple of times, but he wasn't too much of a sports fan. We were always up there. As a group come from Mahoning Avenue, we always went up as a group, and we never got in too much of an argument with the fellows from Goat Hill. But Mahoning Avenue East End, and we used to have little problems with the Irish Town gang of kids across the railroad tracks. We'd have stone fights.
stone fights.
A railroad pick up these goonies along the railroad and throw them across the railroad at each other.
Yes.
If we'd hit each other in the head, we'd have
killed
them. It
would have been too bad, huh? This would have been the Irish
group, Irish
then.
And the Italian.
The Irish and the Italian. And yet you live fairly close to one another. You
would, oh, yes.
But each had his own.
Of course, the Italians, they lived on both sides. The Zainas, which is, I don't know, Gigi Zaina, who was a councilman here, and his folks and my folks are real close. They were real close. And of course, John Zaina, he played football with the Fairmont Bulls. Even today, we meet him and his wife, and me and my wife, and John Pisnez and his wife, we meet on Sundays, and we play cards. And we just have a good time.
There seem to be quite lasting friendships developed from this football team.
Oh, yes.
And the
rivalry was during the game. After the game was over, then, of course, East
friends.
End and Gold Hill used to have good rivalry in baseball. East End never had a football team. They always had a baseball team. And they played their game down where the Lions Manufacturing is now.
Okay, down on Lake Park Boulevard?
On Lake Park Boulevard, right where the Lions Manufacturing factory is now. Used to be their baseball field, but they never had a fence around it. It was easy to watch.
You could get in free.
You couldn't get out. They had a few little stands to sit in, but no fence around it. So if you want to sit in the stands, of course, you had to pay. But the rest of us, we just stay out in the field and watch the games.
And watch. Yeah. Well, Lions, though, has quite a football feeling even today, and I can see that it goes far, far back, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, I don't know. Sports always gets into somebody's blood, and I don't care where you're at. If you're a sports fan, you'll go most any place to see some good game.
A good game.
I've always said a football fan is a football fan, and he'll go any place as long as you have a good game for him to see, and it don't conflict with one of the games he wants to go see. For example, I follow Alliance High School. I've followed them ever since I got out. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll go to their game no matter where it's at. And if there's a Mount Union game the same night, I won't go see Mount Union. Mm-hmm. And if there's any other game. But if they split, when they would see Mount Union start playing on Sunday afternoons, I don't miss any of their games either now. See? And I feel, and of course, West Branch. My children are all in the West Branch area. My grandchildren go to the West Branch school. And I don't miss any of their games, as long as you don't conflict with the Lions High School game.
I see. Well, you pick your team that you want to watch,
that's
and then
right.
The other ones
that's
come
right.
Second.
So I still say that if you got a good game to go see, then a football fan will go see a game.
Indeed, they will.
Any given night.
And these were the only sports that were played in these areas? There was nothing else? No basketball?
Basketball, there wasn't too much basketball played in those days. Not least not in the high school they played some basketball, but not in... Well, as we call neighborhood.
Yes.
Neighborhood team. In fact, there is no neighborhood football teams today. There used to be a lot of neighborhood football teams beside Goat Hill and beside East End. Well, no, East End. Beside Goat Hill football teams, there used to be the Eagles, the Buckeyes. There was another one. I played on what they call the Junior Buckeyes when I was just a kid. The Junior Buckeyes, the Buckeyes, and the Eagles. San Martino is an old timer, and he played a lot of football with the old Buckeyes and with the Eagles, and he was a good football player. But he never got to, in other words, he wasn't with Mount Union. He was down there close to us on Mahoning Avenue. He was off on Front Street, right off of Mahoning. Hmm. And Sam was a good football player, but he was more with the Buckeyes and with the Eagles.
Hmm. How old were you when you started playing football? It was the Fairmont Bulls at the time you started.
Oh, that when you're semi-pro, yeah. But when I started playing football, you see this nose, it's...
Oh, it's played football for a while,
on
huh?
On the streets, about 9 years old.
But when you actually joined a team, an organized team?
The first time, well, the Lions High School, of course. And then with the Fairmont Bulls first, and then with Ravenna Gulf Oils. Oh, I started to tell you about Joe DeLeon. When we went up there to play, then, of course... I quit. I didn't play after that game up there. Well, now there's a football player on the Cleveland Browns now by the name of Tom DeLeon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in Ravenna here last fall. I'm talking to one of the fellows I played with. I says, by the way, I says, that fellow that we used to play football with, Joe DeLeon, Would this be his son on playing with the Browns? He used to play with Ohio State. Well, that's his grandson.
Grandson. Oh, my word. Well, it shows football really gets in your blood,
that's
too,
right.
And they're still interested in it.
So Tom DeLeon, I played with his grandfather.
How about that? You ought to write to him sometime.
Yeah.
Tell him that. Going back to the early Goat Hill when you were still watching the games, how about the rivalry on the field and off the field then, when these were the Welsh against the Irish teams?
Well, you must understand, most of the teams that came in to play at Goat Hill, there's only, as far as baseball is concerned, once a year they would play the East End. But then there was the House of David used to come in. You remember there used to be a famous team, the House of David, always had long beard?
Oh.
They came every year to play at Goat Hill.
Were they Jewish? Is that how they got the name?
No, all they did was call them the House of David.
And
I don't know
the
what
long
they were.
Beard.
They wore beard and long hair. And they were a team up until, as very recently as 10, 15 years ago, they used to call them the House of David, used to have a baseball team. And the Homestead Grays and all these famous semi-pro, or, you know, local teams.
City
every
teams.
Community had a local team back in those days. Between 1910 and 1920, every community had a team. Mm-hmm. There was teams down at Hanoverton. There was teams down at all those little communities down Minerva and over Magnolia. They all had teams. See, they
We were just mentioning the teams that used to come in and play at Goat Hill.
Yeah, and of course, in the football, the most famous that everybody wanted to watch when they went down there was the Akron Mutes.
Akron Mutes. Why would they be called the Akron Mutes?
Because they were supposed to be. Whether they were or not, I don't know. They'd be in the backfield and they'd...
Use sign language.
They'd grunt. All you could hear them was grunt. None of them shouted. And they never called signals because back in those days, on play, signals were called by the quarterback at all times. You could hear them all over the field.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mutes, all they did was use fingers.
Sign language.
And when the Akron Mutes came, it was a big game to go down and watch.
Oh,
as
yes.
In football. And the big game in the summertime with baseball was when the Homestead Grays or the House of David or their, well, of course, when Camp Sherman come here to play football, too, that was a big one.
Oh, I'll bet.
And of course, these were big games down there. And every given Sunday afternoon in summer or fall, Gold Hill was crowded.
Hmm.
No cars parked around because people walked.
They walked.
There were no cars. Well, later on there was a few cars, but
was there public transportation?
Oh, the streetcar line, of course.
Streetcar.
Oh, sure. They'd come up from Sebring and on the trolley and get off there at Summer Street, and that would be Summer Street and Morgan, and walk over.
Hmm.
Or they come from the other end of town and get off there at the same place. See, there was a trolley car.
I would
stock electric.
That would have been a pretty popular stop
on
a Sunday. How about then later if they wanted to take a picnic? Were there any other areas?
Picnics
or
in Alliance?
Yes.
Of course, there's Rock Hill Park, which was pretty famous. They had a racetrack over there. I can remember some racing over there. I never remember any horse races, but I remember motorcycle races. And it had a good swimming hole over there. Had a real nice pavilion until it burned down here. Oh, it's been as recent, 10, 15 years ago, somebody set fire to it. But they had a nice dance hall out there, a pavilion, and a bathhouse, and a nice picnic grove. And of course, then there was Lake Park down here.
Yes, off of Lake Park Boulevard.
Off of Lake Park Boulevard. Every Sunday it was jammed. On a Saturday night, the dances they had down there, you couldn't hardly get into the dance hall. Because a trolley, the streetcar line went right by there.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember when they had a swim meet down there. Every Sunday it was crowded with swimmers. They had the old the dance hall. It was on this side of the lake in later years, but formerly it was across the lake. And the dance hall was upstairs, and downstairs was a penny arcade, and then there was a a lot of concession stands all the way along there as you walked up to, and it was a place where people went on a Sunday.
Yes, a nice
Sunday
place.
You went down to Lake Park or you went to Maple Beach Park. Of course, Maple Beach Park was the first one to fade.
Mm-hmm.
We had picnics down on Maple Beach Park. It was up until World War I.
Mm-hmm.
the Italians had picnics down there. And of course, we had picnics all up and down the river where we could get a groove and we'd have a picnic.
Now, Maple Beach Park is located where?
Right at the dead end of Mahoney. Well, it's right almost where our Maple Beach playground is now. Of course, it run all the way down to the river. Then close to the river was where the cassette, they had a few concession stands down there and where you could go down and rent a boat. On a given Sunday, they would rent out 10, 15 boats for a young couple would get in a boat and row up the river. And
Nice recreation. Oh, no, yeah. Nobody rows but around
you,
on that river
today. In other
today.
Words, you had to get your recreation in town. Mm-hmm. There's no way to jump in a car and go after it. And if you didn't go to Lake Park or to Rock Hill Park, you went to Maple Beach. Of course, like I say, Maple Beach was the first one to fade, and then, of course, Rock Hill Park faded, and then Lake Park hung on quite a bit because they had the dance hall down there. Mm-hmm. And then when their lease ran out, the Williams, I don't remember his first name, they had a 50-year lease down there, and finally their lease ran out, and then the dance hall was torn down, and then there's nothing there.
No,
but at one time, they had a nice swimming beach, big dance hall, for picnics or anything you wanted. Not a recreation because everybody from Alliance had to go there. See?
Yes.
Or you took the trolley and you went over to Myers Lake.
Mm-hmm, into Canton.
But that was special when you went over there,
yes.
You understand? That was a special Sunday. Usually you went around here.
What else did they have at Goat Hill? You had mentioned now they had a big field.
They had a swimming pool.
Okay.
One time they had a swimming pool. It was one of the first concrete swimming pools in Alliance. And then there were two boys drowned in there. The last one drowned in there was a boy, the name of, I remember that one, Bill Rampelt, 1921, I believe it was. He drowned, and then they closed it off.
Now, where was that located?
It would be located just directly east of where the Morgan School is now. Just probably, I would say, 50 feet east of where the school is now.
And so that's would be right where Forest Dead Ends.
No, where Garwood.
Garwood.
Where this would be where Wade Street comes across and Garwood. And then it would be probably east from Wade Street, probably maybe 25, 30 feet. But they had to, I mean, I don't remember it when it had water in it. I can't remember that.
Okay.
The only time I remember it, it was they'd abandoned it. It was full of junk and cans and everything else in there. Well, when it was determined not to use it anymore after the second boy got drowned. Fellow named Bill, I think his name was Bill, but his last name was Rampel. He got drowned in 1921. I can just remember him talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's continued. But that was part of Goat Hill. They had an athletic group down there that had this field.
And this was a multi-purpose field. In other words, they had stands there and they watched
yeah.
football, but you also played baseball on
the
it.
The field belonged to the Morgan Engineering Company. And Goat Hill either leased it or got the use of it, or they was using it, and Morgan Engineering just let them have it for whatever they want to use it for.
Hmm.
And this grandstand was erected, and it was a fairly substantial grandstand they had there, and a fence all the way around it. And then, of course, in later years, when the crowds dwindled, the fence got dilapidated, and there was no more. Of course, we used to delight in watching Charlie Grawl see if he could hit a home run.
Over
I can
the
remember
fence.
A home run, a Noble Shoe Stores, used to give a new pair of shoes for every home run that was hit over the fence. He would have to hit it up onto Morgan Avenue. He was a left-handed swinger, and every time Charlie came up, well, everybody screamed and wanted a home run.
Oh,
and he would get one every once in a while. I got a pair of free shoes from the Noble Shoe Store.
Pretty nice. So you can see that lots of people were interested in this.
I tell you, it was a drawing attraction for all of Alliance, not just for the area of Goat Hill. They came from all over Alliance down there. Because, like I say, a sports fan is a sports fan. He wants to see a game, he'll go.
Mm-hmm.
But then in later years, when there was other attractions, when the radio came in, and of course, when television came, it ruined everything. But even when the radio came back in 1925, 26, along in there, I don't know, it just changed the picture altogether. Your younger group came up, and you couldn't get them interested in going down and watch players down there.
So it faded about what time?
Well, of course, the last year was 1930 when the Fairmont Bulls had their team. From then on, there were no more teams.
I see. And then the place just
then
generally...
I'll say this. From then on, they had what they called the Goat Hill Juniors. Used to have teams, a younger group, the teenagers. They still carried on as a group, having teams, meeting some other teenage team, but nothing anywhere as near organized like it was before.
Mm-hmm. How about the people who formed a group and had reunions? Was there not a group of Goat Hill friends who?
Yes, starting in 1940, they started to have reunions out at Goat Hill, out at Rock Hill Park. And Bud Howell, who was one of the fellows who played with him back in the days, in the heyday of Goat Hill, used to take moving pictures of the thing. And he took them 1940, 41, and 42, and 42, 3 years. And he passed away. And then, of course, they come and ask me. They knew that I had a movie camera. I said, okay, I'll come out. And I took them. And I met with them every year out there. And it was a nice group. And we used to meet out there. Usually it was on a Sunday, and we would meet at the pavilion, and we'd have refreshments and food and everything. And then every year, we would have a little recess and go across the lake on the other side. There used to be a ball field in the middle of the racetrack over there, and we'd play a softball game. All the old timers, you know, I got some pictures showing this ball game. Now, Spike Morrissey was the fellow that, I don't think he ever got married, but he used to be the catcher, the old-timer, and everybody loved Spike, but he was one of these old-timers, you know. And he hit a ball out there, I'll never forget. And he goes swinging around second, goes into third base, overruns third base, and the ball comes over there. And he went back in with a hook slide that would be as well as any big leaguer would make today. I tell you, and I got a moving picture of it, and you wouldn't think that an oldster, he had to be that time at least pretty close to 60. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when we would adjourn from the refreshments we had, and by this time everybody was in
well refreshed, yes.
And walk around the lake to go over to, Goat Jones, who used to be the first baseman with the old game, he says, no, sir, I will not walk around that lake. I will swim across. So every year, he used to take off his clothes and swim across the lake to go. We always had to wait on him because it took time for him to swim across. And Goat Jones was, in later years, probably weighed about 280 pounds. He was a big one. And when he jumped in that lake, the lake went up a couple of inches. But everybody used to laugh and watch him come across there, swimming across. And I got pictures of him swimming across the lake.
But you mean he swam across the lake and then he played ball?
Yeah, then
he played
of course
ball
we would,
too.
Yeah, we would take the clothes around for him. He would play ball. He wouldn't play too much. He'd play a bit of first base, and he'd take a couple of swings at the ball. But the ones that was really active and really surprised me, old Spike Morrissey. And old Spike, he was a catcher back in those days. And, of course, he always had a feud with umpires. And the umpire back in those days was a fellow named Neil Lorden. He worked for the Ohio Edison as a line foreman. And when we come out to the reunion, when the umpire came, Spike Morrissey grab a bottle, I'm going to kill him. He says, always kill an umpire when you get close enough to him. And old Neil would come over, and they'd have a little set to there, all friendly.
All in fun, yeah.
Here comes the umpire, I'm going to kill him. Oh, Spike Morrissey, and I tell you, it was just fun to meet with those boys. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, and all these fellas that come, there was Dan Shea and old man Shea, John Shea, and I got pictures of them, real Irish as they come,
mm-hmm.
All from down that area down there, and one of the finest first basemen around, because after Goat Jones couldn't play anymore, then Dan Shea became first baseman for the Goat Hill, and he was a good one. And of course, Ralph Fox, who I thought might have been able to go to the big leagues, because he was a real good shortstop, and he was a good one. And of course, then it was Jimmy Jones and like I say, Joe Jones. It was all that group to us were heroes to us. Because yeah. We're talking now about me as a group of 10, 11, 12-year-old kids. But those were the heydays of Goat Hill. Hmm. And I don't know that, well, of course, there's no such thing as say they'll come back. But it was a golden era, I think, in the City of Alliance, of a place where people were close. Everybody knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, somehow we got away from that.
Well, it was a special kind of spirit.
I don't know
it?
if the force that knitted them together was the teams or whether it was the clans, or whether you was Irish, or whether you was Welsh, and whether you was a goat, or whether you wasn't a goat, but anyhow, there was a spirit. And of course, down on Goat Hill, D.I. Mainwaring had his little grocery store down there. And this was the meeting place. Anytime they grouped, you went down to D.I.'s, you found a group of Goat Hillers in there. They were always in there talking. Of course, he sold sporting goods and he sold groceries. And of course, this would be Dave Mainwaring's dad, one of the finest fellows you ever met, a real fine fellow. And you know, he passed away with a heart attack at an early age too. He died, I think he was 48 years old. It really shook me up because he was a real good friend of mine. And you know, a lot of these people you see today, that sure, they'll talk to you and brush you up, but no, but you know, I don't know, you just don't have that feeling. I run into one of these guys once in a while. Tick Herford will come around. I'll be down on Main Street, he'd be a block away, and he'll yell at me, "Hey, Paul."
Yes.
You know, this is the kind
this
of
thing. This is friendship.
Yeah.
This is friendship.
Not that that means different, but today people, you almost have to brush them before they'll speak to you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's so, not as outgoing as it was then.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we were better off then than we are now.
Well, regardless of how we are now, they were good times then.
They were good times. There were good times for everybody. And of course, starting from 1920 to 1933, we had that prohibition era in there, that all through that area down through there was this bootleggers and all these speakeasies and all that thing went on down through there. And I know it just changed the whole picture.
Yes.
It just changed the whole picture.
Mm-hmm. Because that signaled the end of it, didn't
it? The fellow who was I don't know. I've always felt, as far as prohibition is concerned, that I don't think there's any way through legislation that you can legislate the habits and the morals of the people. And these fellows who were, Welsh, these old-timers and the Irish, and you just made them sneak back in the alleys, which to them it was just an awful thing to have to do.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the, I'm not here to speak for or against prohibition, for or against booze. I don't approve anybody overindulging. I never have, and I don't myself. But some of those fellows really took it hard, and it changed the whole picture, not only in Goat Hill, USA.
Hmm.
USA.
Hmm.
In 1927, I went to New York. I was a kid, 16 years old. I went down there with my sister and my brother-in-law, met with a lot of people who were from Alliance, went down there. Why, there were saloons on every corner like there was before. There was no different than there was before.
Hmm.
I mean, in New York City, they have flaunted the law, and down through here, we try to hammer it down people's throats.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get into that.
It was yes, it doesn't. It pertains to Goat Hill in a way.
Yeah, and it pertains to changing the complexion of the attitude of the people.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm. It definitely was a change in that area,
yeah,
too. How about other people who became successful? Now, we have you, and you've served as safety service director for how long?
Well, I've been in city business now for, this is my 19th year. I was safety service director for 6 years, then bailiff of the court for 8 years, and now I'm back as safety service director for 5 years, and possibly for three more if I stay. I'm 65 years old now, and I am going to stay for a while yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you had mentioned someone else from that area who went to become the head of the State
Patrick,
Highway Patrol.
I can't remember his first name, but he went on, he became the manager of Hopkins Airport at Cleveland.
That would be Cleveland Hopkins Airport.
Cleveland Hopkins Airport.
And he was from Goat Hill. And
he played with Goat Hill.
You
played
had
on the old football team.
Mm-hmm. And you had also talked about someone who went on to become the head of the State Highway Patrol, too.
Well, that's Bob Shaw from Minerva. He played with me with the Fairmont Bulls in 1930. I think his first name was Bob. Anyhow, he went on to became at least a division head of the Highway Patrol in down in Columbus, and I think he's retired now.
Hmm.
He was a tall, big man, good end, about 6'2", 6'3", just an ideal man for an end. But he was a good football player.
Well, I would think in those days when you didn't rely so much on your equipment, you all had to be pretty good size.
Yeah,
to
you had to
take
be able
care
to,
of yourself.
Yeah, you had to be able to dodge around.
Oh, anything else to cover in this?
I don't know about that. alliances that used to be in alliances that is today. It's my town, and I think it's one of the finest communities around, and we try to make it better. And being how things have changed from those days, I most certainly don't want to go back to have those kind of times. We're much better off than we are now than we were then. But Alliance is still my town, and I like it. And I think it's one of the better communities around, and I want to keep it that way.
And I think there are a lot of people in the Alliance that would agree with that, too. Those of us, you who have lived here all your life, and those of us who have moved into it, too. Thanks much for being with us today. Mm-hmm.